through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us right now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Mark Ross. He's an NFL Network analyst. By the way, you guys, you can follow him on Twitter, at Mark Ross. That's Mark with a C. And listen to him right now, because he's going to help us dive into the NFL Draft, which kicks off on Thursday, April 29th, 5 p.m. local time. Mark, how are you? I bet it's been a busy week.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Fun week. Not busy, fun.
That's true. There's so many storylines. So the Seattle Seahawks, I do have some questions about, you know, what you think they might do or anything like that. But I think that a lot of the storylines that are going to be in night one, round one, particularly at number three overall, are still ones that Seahawks fans are watching. So let's go ahead and talk about what the 49ers might do with that pick. Mark, I have a really hard time. I have a really hard time believing that San Francisco gave up the farm to not know exactly who they wanted, right?
Yeah, this is just silly right now when San Francisco's acting like they're still trying to decide who they're picking. And you're 2 days before the draft and you're saying that you either just don't know what you're doing or you're just taking it overboard with trying to be coy and fly with everything. So when they made that trade, they knew exactly who they were taking. They've been doing their due diligence, just doing the fine points of digging into the rest of the players that could be there, but they knew exactly who they wanted. I was a part of with the Eagles back in 1999. We took Donovan McNabb. There was a group of quarterbacks, but we knew Donovan was our guy 2 months before the draft, and everything after that was just kind of confirming that or just making sure about everything. I've been a part of 20 plus drafts, and we would be picking 32nd. We knew the guy that we were taking a couple weeks before the draft, just because you have so many meetings. Yeah. So definitely if you have the third pick, and definitely if you trade three other picks to get that third pick, you know who you're taking at least a month in advance.
Just giving us, again, kind of tapping into your last answer, a behind the scenes, how much time do people put into, does it change for like a first round pick? You might put in like a year of work or anything like that. Can you give us kind of a behind the scenes for the prep that those front offices might do?
Yeah, so the area scouts, if people don't know, that each scouting staff has scouts that live all throughout the country that go to their respective schools in their areas. And they are looking at this year, but they always know the programs. They always know the players that are coming through. So area scouts for years kind of know the good players and have contacts with the schools talking about it. But, of course, it ramps up when guys are juniors and seniors and they're coming out. And it's just a year long of evaluation where reports are written, information is dug into. And then once the coaches start getting involved, the medical staff, your owners start getting involved, where you're just putting all your time and energy into digging into these players. You have the All-Star games. Typically, you've got the combine. You can bring these players into your facilities. So you have all these different avenues of evaluating these players. The higher the pick, the more you kind of put more time into those players, is because of you're investing so much into those guys and the financial implications of that, as opposed to a seventh round pick. You're putting time in, but just not the same amount. And of course, when you get the quarterback situation involved, you're putting even more time and energy into those players.
Now, Mark, one of the fascinating aspects about the whole COVID process and now NFL teams doing it again for the second time is now you have players that are opting to come back to college more so than any other time. So in your evaluation of this draft, how deep is this draft in terms of the talent that will be there?
I think it's still, people were kind of worried going into this year about it, but when you just look at the landscape of it, I think it's a good group. There's more groups that are more talented than others, more position groups. And, the corner group is very, very strong. I mean, the best I've seen in a while. The offensive line group is very strong. The receiver group is very strong. But then you look at some other positions that are not as strong, and that's interior defensive line or safety. And I don't think that has anything to do with the COVID this year. That just has to do with that's just how drafts kind of typically stack up. Year to year, you have strengths and weaknesses in the positions. The COVID situation, so every year you do have risks with players, and those are typically injuries or character or mental things that throw people off, throw players off. Now you've got the guys that you're evaluating who did not play a whole year because they took off that, you know, the Greg Rousseaus and Jamar Chases of the world. So you're just adding an extra element of uncertainty that you haven't seen in the years past. And you really just have to be diligent in your evaluation process to make sure you just treat that more like, okay, what if this guy got injured this year as opposed to he took the year off because of COVID. But overall, I think it's a strong group with just as many question marks as the years past.
Now, Mark, in your evaluation, I mean, there's talk, and we'll see if it actually indeed happens. Anything can change on draft day, but the conversation of five quarterbacks potentially being taken in the top 10, do you believe that that is indeed actually the talent level of the top five quarterbacks in this draft? And outside of the top two, which we all believe it's going to be Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, who in your mind is the better, is number three in this draft if you were selecting?
Yes. So people need quarterbacks, and people get desperate for quarterbacks, and we've seen it year in and year out with teams trading up or teams overvaluing that position in a typical – and we look at this group, and historically, each year we're like, all these guys are going to be good. Well, no, one or two of these guys will be good. Two will be bust. One will be bad. You know, so it's that mix, but every year it's that hope. It's that hope. And teams know they need quarterbacks, and they can't win in this league without playmaking quarterbacks, so – that's why you overvalue them. You know, obviously Trevor Lawrence is the number one. He has been forever. I think he's kind of skated through this process without getting critiqued for some reason because everybody wants to believe he is that guy. But he does have some major flaws that aren't talked about. But Justin Fields, to me, is the guy that for whatever reason is getting unfairly criticized throughout this whole process and undervalued throughout this whole process. This guy has done everything you want a franchise quarterback to do on and off the field. When you look at his accomplishments, you break down all the other guys. You say, well, Trevor Lawrence is productive and he's won. Well, that's what Justin Fields has done. Trey Lance is super talented. Well, Justin Fields is more talented than Trey Lance. Zach Wilson can do this. Well, so can Justin Fields. And for whatever reason, people are diminishing what he's done because he really is a total package of what you want in a guy. And I think in the long run, he'll be the best of this whole group.
Do you think he's one of those guys you're most curious about? Like every draft year, particularly in the first round, I always think, I wish I could fast forward 10 years and know exactly how these picks are going to work out. Are there one, two, maybe three names where you're like, man, I wish I could do the same. Like, I am so curious to know if this guy pans out.
Yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball with all the draft picks back when I was
every year.
Years, like, yeah, let's take these Hall of Famers in the third round. You know, the defensive end group is really intriguing just because there's so many wild cards with this group. And in years past with defensive ends, you've seen big-time guys, Chase Young last year, Myles Garrett, the Bosas, Bradley Chubb, that guys that really performed at a high level for you know, two or three years, and you knew, like, those guys are going to be stars. Well, this year, the edge group is really just a mix of, you know, the top guys were Jalen Phillips from Miami, who's only played 1 year, retired from football, and has been had a serious injury history. He talked about Greg Rousseau, who didn't even play this year, has only started seven games in his career, was hurt his freshman year. So you're looking at, you know, Jason Owe from Penn State, who had zero sacks this year and is talented. So there's just so many wild cards in this group that it'll be interesting how they all pan out and if anyone is turned into be a Pro Bowl caliber player, because a lot of them have talented workout sort of aspects to them but weren't really great football players. So we'll see how that goes.
Now, Mark, I would be remiss if we didn't make this a little bit more centralized to the Seattle area here. The Seahawks entering the draft with only three picks. We all know that they're scratching their head a little bit in terms of itching to want to have more picks. Do you anticipate them trading down in this draft to do just that? Or is this one of those years where they just need to go after the quality that is there in the second round?
Yeah, I think they do need to accumulate more picks. You never want to go into a draft with three picks. And I think they're going to do their best at that number, especially the number two spot. You know, that number, the seventh-round pick, you're not going to get much from that. So it's really that number two, try to trade down and accumulate multiple picks. They have a lot of holes. They have a lot of needs. I don't think they're that one player, and they'll be happy and say, just that second-round pick, this guy's going to change it for us. So I would look for them to do that. I think the more picks you have, the better, the more chances you can take at hitting on guys. And you have to look at the broad scheme of things with, Jamal, was that worth it? Was it worth giving up all that for the production he gave? But the trade is made. They've got to help Russell still, and it'll be interesting to see how they go into it. But I would expect them to try to get more picks.
Mark, you were in NFL scouting for 20 years, former vice president of player evaluation for the Giants. So you have a million stories of guys where you were involved in the scouting process, the drafting process, evaluation, whatever it was. Is there a moment that you that kind of stands out to you in your career where you think, you know, wow, I'm really glad we stuck with that pick?
Well, yeah, my very second year in the draft when I was with Philadelphia, I mentioned this, in 1999, that was when we took Donovan McNabb. Mm-hmm. There was a group of quarterbacks there. You know, Ken Couch went number one. It was Achilles Smith, Cade McNown, Dante Culpepper were all in that draft. And I don't know if you guys remember, but one of the most iconic draft moments was Donovan. We picked Donovan, and he got booed on draft night, and that's because the whole entire city of Philadelphia, all the fans, wanted Ricky Williams. It wasn't even another quarterback. They wanted Ricky Williams. And it was a month of just on the talk radio, sports radios there in Philly, the newspapers. I mean, it was just Ricky Williams, Ricky Williams, Ricky Williams. And it was really for us, you know, I've always had kind of conviction in things I do, but it really cemented that for me just in my second year as a 23-year-old scout, whatever it was. Like, yeah, Donovan McNabb is a guy, and I don't care what anybody else says. We got to roll with this guy, and thankfully the whole entire organization believed that. And the head coach, you know, Andy Reid, and our GM at the time, Tom Modrak, and the ownership were all on board, and they didn't succumb to the negative pressure that was there from the Philadelphia fan base and media there. That, you know, Donovan ended up going to five NFC championship games and Pro Bowls and you know, best quarterback in Philadelphia history. So that's kind of the starting out as a young scout. You know, I can always look back to that and say that kind of set the foundation of how I went and looked at other drafts.
Now, Mark, our front offices and everyone that works in there, area scouts or GMs and everybody that has, you know, a seat at the table, are they impervious to the outside or do they hear it? Like, for example, I know Stacey asked you about the 49ers, but Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, they're all hearing about the outside opinion, or it's very loud in terms of the outside opinion of what they should do and who they should select and the opinions of that. Is that something that you guys truly are, in your experience, able to block out in the process, or is it just human nature to hear some of those things?
Honestly, some can and some can't. And I think there's less that can block it out and just go by what they see and what they believe, and don't succumb to groupthink. Don't succumb to media pressure. Don't succumb to they're calling their buddies and what do you think and those sort of things. I mean, there is a lot of that goes on. And especially now, the more and more the media are involved. You know, when I first started, it was here and there, but now it's just 24/7 nonstop. With the media coverage, with the social media platforms, with it being televised, you know, all day, all night about mock drafts and who's the best and evaluations and armchair scouts and things like that. And it takes special people in the league to really stick by their convictions and stick by what they believe and not follow or change their mind based on what the outside perceptions are.
He is Mark Ross, an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at M-A-R-C Ross, R-O-S-S. And you guys absolutely should be. This NFL draft is going to have a lot of fun tidbits, a lot of fun stories. Like we were talking about with Mark, that number three pick by San Francisco is going to end up being part of the landscape of the NFC West for years to come. Going to be a player, presumably a quarterback. You guys see the Seahawks play two times a year. Don't forget, also, NFL Network provides live coverage of the 2021 NFL Draft from Cleveland, starting Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific. Mark, thank you so much. We really do appreciate your insight and appreciate you taking the time on such a busy week.
No, my pleasure. You guys enjoy it.
All right. It is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake. What unlikely radical move. What unlikely radical move could the Seahawks make that would send shockwaves across the NFL?
Everybody's going to think with this question, it would be about a current player trading a current player. No, Curtis and Stacy. the radical, unlikely move that I think would send shockwaves across the NFL is there's been a rumor out there about Julio Jones' availability. Could you imagine if the Seahawks took their second-round pick and they said, you know what, we don't even need early-round picks. We are going to go out and we are only going to acquire proven veteran players this year and go out and trade for a guy like Julio Jones. Now, you'd have to make some moves. You'd have to move some money around to obviously make that work with the salaries of Tyler Lockett now and Julio Jones and everybody else that they have. But that would be an insane move that would, I think, send a lot of fear into everyone in the NFC in terms of, could you imagine DK Metcalf, Julio Jones, and Tyler Lockett? Oh, my goodness, that would be absurd, absolutely absurd.
Second down, Stacey, turn your mic on.
It is on. It's on. I dropped the ball. I had one fumble, okay? You got it.
Stacey, yeah. Whose latest mock draft is raising eyebrows and why?
That would be one constructed by Chris Sims. Now, I like Chris Sims, fan of Chris Sims. And as you rightfully pointed out, Curtis, he has nailed a lot of quarterback evaluations and picks before. So that's why this one, I think, is raising eyebrows. It's why I think it's stirring up a bit of controversy. So obviously, Trevor Lawrence, number one overall. Zach Wilson, number two to the Jets. Nothing is controversial. Here we go. Number three overall. He's got the 49ers sticking with Mac Jones. And then you have a couple other quarterbacks kind of dropping. Trey Lance going to Washington as part of a trade with Carolina at eight. The name, though, that is causing people to turn their heads, number 32, Tampa Bay, taking quarterback Justin Fields.
Beg pardon?
Yes, that's exactly right.
32,
final pick of the first round is where he has Justin Fields falling. Justin Fields has been mocked, by the way, to San Francisco before. He's been mocked potentially to Detroit, potentially to a team that trades in there with Carolina at number eight. He has him as the last quarterback taken, not just the last quarterback taken, but the last player of the first round. Other names to be aware of here. He has Levi Nwuzurike going at 25 to Jacksonville. I think that's the one that was most interesting to me. He has Dallas rather than going with Kyle Pitts, who they've kind of been mocked to because of Jerry Jones's interest. He does have them going defense, obviously. And it's really just the Justin Fields pick that I don't want this to be right because I like Fields, and I can't tell if this is just baiting people into conversations. They have to come up with like a million mock drafts. Eventually you're going to make picks that you don't fully believe in. But I would just hate to see this happen because I think Fields can be a really good quarterback at this level.
Third down. Jake, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch had their joint press conference yesterday and they were not giving away anything. Was Kyle Shanahan just out there trolling anybody? What did you make of that whole thing?
Well, I certainly at one point thought that this press conference by Kyle Shanahan was just about trolling everybody. And you go to cut number five here, Kyle Shanahan talking about how we might not even be alive rather than asking questions. He's asking existential questions here.
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday, so I can't guarantee who will be on our roster on Sunday. So that goes for all of us.
I still love it.
I mean, my goodness. It got dark real, real fast in Kyle Shanahan's press conference. But I think that for him, look, they know who they want. They know who they're going to go after at this point in the draft. And I think that he's doing everything that he can to not reveal his hand here as much as possible. And so although Chris Sims may have Justin Fields at 32, the one name that hasn't been not talked about as much or has not been as linked to the 49ers is Justin Fields. And so I think that could he be doing the bait and switch here, hyping up Mac Jones, hyping up Trey Lance, and then eventually going after Justin Fields? I think it would be odd because he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to go through this whole song and dance and process unless he feels that the Jets would change their mind about Zach Wilson. So I think that Kyle Shanahan is in tired of all the questions. I think he's tired of all the opinions about Mac Jones, and I think that he was having a little fun with the media yesterday.
Fourth down. J. Jake, what do Seahawks fans have to keep reminding themselves as they watch the draft over this upcoming weekend?
They have to keep reminding themselves that they traded their picks this year for proven quality veterans. And not just quality veterans, stars. Jamal Adams, obviously, he took up your first-round pick and your third-round pick of this year's draft. So when those rounds come along, just think of yourself selecting Jamal Adams and get excited about that. Fifth-round selection, Gabe Jackson. I think that that would be a pretty good fifth-round selection for you heading into this 2021 season. So although they only have three picks in this draft, and I imagine that they're going to accumulate more over the course of the draft, you have to remember that they spent these on good, very, very top-end talented players, and I feel very comfortable with that at this stage in time.
Can I just say that with the Jamal Adams pick, because I was thinking that, it's like you just need to, in your mind, be like, okay, this was used for Carlos Dunlap, this was used for Jamal Adams. There's something about players just being in the league for a year or two where people automatically think like, but they're old. And it's like Jamal Adams is, what, 25?
Like, yeah, he's young.
He's so young. Someone, I was talking with someone the other day that was trying to say that about the running backs, and I'm like, all the running backs are young. I mean, running backs have a very different timeline than do almost any other position on the roster, but still, I think that there's this kind of false notion that a player has been in the league for 2 years and like he's old and you want someone new, and it's like, nah, man, like that's, he's able to reach his prime still. Would you do that trade all over again?
The Jamal Adams trade?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this stage in time, I still think it's early to determine whether or not, whether it was a good decision or not. I think that what Jamal Adams brings to the table, I think that he's a guy that has all the ability to be a major impact player. And so when we had Mike Salk earlier on our show, I think the part that he hit strongly for Jamal Adams is the thing that I will be going back to, is it's not just the tackles, it's not just the sacks, and all those things are great, but it's the turnovers, it's the disruptiveness. Does his play create turnovers? And I think that that part of it is something that needs to improve. Whether, and he had his hand on the ball multiple times. I mean, he could have had 4 interceptions last year if he had just caught balls that were thrown right to his chest. So I think their opportunities are there. He's a guy that makes plays all over the place, and I do think in the long run that this is going to be a trade that we feel very good about.
Now, you guys remember when Baker Mayfield and his wife Emily, he said they were driving down the street and saw a UFO. Well, he has since done an interview where he explains that sighting, and not only does he back it up, that's not the only thing he claims he believes in, and we all should too. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Getting you caught up with some of the funny stories, weird stories, just newsworthy stories floating around on social media this hour, by the way, brought to you by the Pro Club. We'll start right here. LA Chargers running back Austin Eckler told the Dan Le Batard show that when he, well, not when he first met Philip Rivers, but he thought Philip Rivers, when he first met his family, was doing a meet and greet because of how many children Philip Rivers and his wife have. They have 9, by the way. So he sees Rivers, obviously, with a giant group of kids. This is what he thinks.
Were you struck by the number of children that he has? Because I didn't know whether the story was true or not, that the first time you ran into his family, you didn't think those were all his kids.
Right. The first time I saw him, like, we were in San Diego before we transitioned up, I thought he was doing like a meet and greet out on the field. We're just like some youth, right? And then come to find out it was actually, that's just his family. Because, I mean, when you see someone with like 8 little kids running around them, it's like, oh, you know, it's, you know, probably like some like little tour or something like that. But no, those are all of his children. And that was, yeah, very shocked.
It's awesome.
I can believe it. I mean, that's how training, like, if you think of going to training camp, there's tons of kids at training camp. And after training camp, a lot of the players' families will come out onto the field, but players also go sign autographs. The team will have, like, groups that are visiting. So, like, some school kids or a tour group or whatever will come visit. So it's not out of the realm of normal that you'd see a group of kids around a player and think, like, oh, it's like these kids that were brought in by the team to meet their hero or something.
Right.
Nope. Well, his actual kids.
And also players get the opportunity for practice, at least, you know, you can bring a certain amount of people, you know, a good amount of people. You can bring family, you can bring friends, you just have to put them on the list for practices that day, and they can come to practice. So it's you know, to Austin's defense, it's not out of the realm that, you know, for him, he could be thinking, oh, maybe these are cousins or these are friends of you know, some friends of Phillip's kids or whatever. But yeah, it would be pretty shocking to know that large group is all his kids. I thought that was a pretty funny story. From, you know, Austin Eckler, you know, his first experience around Phillip Rivers.
Another funny story from the NFL. I guess I shouldn't say funny story. You know what? I am invalidating Baker Mayfield's beliefs right now, because Baker Mayfield finally got a chance to explain his UFO sighting.
Did you believe in UFOs before the offseason?
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch. It's real. I saw it. I'm glad the Navy finally confirmed some more pictures. Now everybody doesn't think I'm as crazy. I believe.
What was that like? I mean, can you take us through? Just said, I know you and you said you and your wife were just kind of walking home from a restaurant or something. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, we were driving home from dinner. I don't remember what day it was, but just driving home and had the music going. And it was one of those things. She was looking down at her phone right in the passenger seat, and nighttime, so when you're looking at your phone screen, it's everything's dark around you, you can only see that light. But it was bright enough to where it caught her attention too. We kind of just looked at each other and like, did you just see that? Yeah. So other people in that area confirmed too. So
now I obviously have a very real question for the two of you. Have you ever seen a UFO?
I have not personally seen a UFO, and you know, to Baker Mayfield talking about this one, it's very confusing, because when he says UFO and Sasquatch, he's making it seem like he saw Sasquatch piloting the UFO.
I don't get why Sasquatch is thrown in here. Like, at first it's like, okay, me and my wife were driving. We saw literally an unidentified flying object. We don't know what it is. And then later the Navy said there was an unidentified flying object. So I'm right. I'm not crazy. Also, Sasquatch, I believe in him too. Like, he just throws him in.
I know. It doesn't make any sense. But
like, is there another instance?
Sasquatch is over, you know, in some wooded area being like, thanks. I didn't need to support right now, yeah. But I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. But with the UFO thing with Baker Mayfield, you know, a while ago, I would have laughed at it and I'd have been like, this guy's nuts and he's just trying to be funny. He's trying to be, you know, just goofy and whatnot. But I mean, in 2020, the CIA did release an entire collection of UFO related documents. So, I mean, there's a whole list of unidentified aircrafts and things like that that we could all go and research and look through if we wanted to. It's available to the public. So I don't know, man. I'll believe it. Going through this stuff, I mean, there are sometimes just the unexplainable that happens.
Can I just, on a semi-related note, saying best alien movie might be Arrival.
Arrival?
Yeah.
Really?
It's the first thing that came to mind.
I thought that was so long and boring.
Oh, it was so good.
They didn't do anything for forever. The one that always the one that scares me forever and always is the one with Mel Gibson. Signs.
Signs. No, I'll tell you what it was.
That scared me for a long time.
There is one scene from Signs that still terrifies me to this day, and it is when they're watching someone recording. So they're watching a recording of someone who's like in another country at the time, and they're filming outside of their window, and one of the aliens just walks by, and like it pauses. That's the most terrifying moment in that entire movie. Curtis, what's the best alien movie?
Best alien movie? Well, we're getting a remake of it here this summer. That'd be Space Jam. Okay, that's the best alien movie.
You're right. Sorry, my bad.
Space Jam, huh? So, look, now here's the other thing. We've talked about this before, but I have to really be cautious about this, because Space Jam obviously came from our era, our childhood. It is special to us. I mean, do you think, are you walking in there, Curtis, that you are going to be disappointed with this version of Space Jam?
Yes.
Probably. Yes, but absolutely. I'm going to watch it the very first day. I might watch it on HBO Max rather than go to a theater, just because I'm already paying the subscription fee for HBO Max. I don't want to have to pay, you know, $20 to be disappointed. So I'll just watch it at home.
Okay. Suggestions from the text line that I had forgotten about. Independence Day, Interstellar. Yes. Yeah, Interstellar is Day, really good.
Independence Day is the best Alien movie.
I don't think
by
I've seen
far.
Independence Day.
What?
I'm sorry.
You're kidding. You've got to watch it.
No, I've seen
You can't say Arrival without
Prometheus.
Seeing Independence Day. If you still say Arrival after Independence Day, I'll be okay with that. But Will Smith is fantastic.
I love Will Smith. I am confident I will still love Arrival even after watching Independence Day. I thought Arrival was so good, like one of the better movies I'd seen. I'll stand by this.
All right, you can stand by that. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But you do have to see Independence Day. It's a great, great film.
Okay, well, last story here. The recliner Roger Goodell sat in during the 2020 draft. We all remember Robot Raj sitting in his room, gradually like both taking off items of clothing and also getting a little more casual, but like they're not really casual. Like, it would be like, I'm sitting down this time.
It's like, this is what a normal human does.
I've changed
Look at me.
Into a sweater, as you can see from my sweater. it is going to be sent to Cleveland for Thursday's first round. I would be fine with the recliner becoming, like, draft canon.
You think so?
Yeah.
Now, my question is, if they're going to bring the chair out there, they made a big deal about Roger Goodell. He can hug the players and, do all that in the first round. Is it going to be, I would love it if he was all hyped and jacked for the first round, then as everything progresses, he's just in a green room, backstage, just sitting in his chair, just like, yeah, whatever. As it gets progressed, he just becomes less and less interested.
I would love for Roger Goodell. I would love for just human Roger Goodell. Like Roger Goodell that's like, God, I hate doing this. Third overall pick, like anyone cares. Like he just gives up.
If you get paid, $40+ million a year like Roger Goodell does, I think you're pretty hyped and jacked for the draft.
All right, we are spinning the draft need wheel, going to defense next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
I am disgusted with myself, Jake, for missing so many of these Alien movies when we were talking about all-time great Alien movies.
Yes.
First of all, Alien.
Same.
Overlooked that one. Resident Alien, Mars Attacks, Men in Black, E.T., District 9 also in here, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Contact.
Right.
Someone said Lilo and Stitch.
These are things that like I need to look at a list of things when we're talking about them because these are the types of things that I always look at later and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't say that movie.
Right.
Or that movie. How did we miss some of these?
I don't know. Curtis had many of them. Meanwhile, Curtis was like, what about this one, this one, this one? It's just,
yeah, Curtis
just
is on
over.
His A game.
Just,
well,
yeah, I'm ashamed.
Though Curtis is like, trivia-wise, he's just like that. It just comes off right at the top of his head. I'm going to crush him tomorrow when we play Draft, Draft, Draft.
You're talking a big game, Jake.
I feel it in my fingertips. Uh-huh. I feel it.
All right, well, we do have a different game to play right now. Before we get to Draft, 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 which will be tomorrow, we are playing our Spin the Wheel of Seahawks Draft Need. This time, it is defense. Curtis, let me tell you guys, if you're just tuning in, here's how it works. Curtis will spin a wheel. It will land on a position group, this one just on defense, and he will randomly assign it to either me or Jake, and we will make our case for the Seahawks drafting that position at 56 overall, even if we don't think they should. We have to make the case. Curtis, spin the wheel.
Oh, man, I still got it.
I still got it. Cannon.
Curtis. Woo! Calm down. We need to make this go a little faster here. Jeez.
No, I got to show off my wheel spinning skills for the people.
Right. Who's
Jake,
first?
Jake, yeah. It has landed on interior defensive line. Make that case.
Interior defensive line, gladly, my friend. Now, defensive line, defensive tackle is actually a position that I think actually deserves to be addressed here in the draft. And if it doesn't, I know for sure it's going to be addressed through free agency. And this is a reason why this is a need is because they need someone to be able to back up Puna Ford and add good rotation to that third, that three technique defensive tackle position. They've got two pluggers that can rotate well and control the middle of that defense in Brian Monet and Al Woods, but they need somebody that's versatile, that's dynamic, that can be a disruptor in inside, a guy that can generate pass rush, that can knife through the offensive line and get tackles for loss. And so I think there's a unique group. And guys that I have profiled, Levi Onzarike out of the University of Washington, guys like Milton Williams out of Louisiana Tech, who ran an insane 4.6 40 at 284 pounds, Davion Nixon out of Iowa, I think would be outstanding. Aleem McNeil, number 29 in college, rocking that at 6'2", 315 pounds. You gotta love the swag from the big guy. But I think these are four guys that I targeted that I think would make a lot of sense at 56 and would make this defensive line extremely dynamic, disruptive, and when we talk about defensive line and offensive line, it is all about the depth in the trenches.
All right.
Stacey, you ready here?
No.
Oh, well, too bad.
Okay. I'm just glad I didn't get tight end or running back when we did offense. I was nervous.
I'm glad you don't play Wheel of Fortune. My goodness.
Well, I called it earlier Russian Roulette, and Curtis was like, no.
Yeah, we don't call it
we don't
that.
I was like, sorry, I thought
That's
we were spinning the Russian Roulette wheel.
It.
That's not.
Stacey has landed on pass rush.
Pass rush? Okay.
Make the case.
I can do that. Not
do
a
it,
problem.
Stacey.
Now, here's what I'll say about pass rush. Easy. You can never have too much of a good thing in the NFL, especially if that thing is a good pass rusher and that pass rusher is playing under a cheap rookie deal. Now, I'm actually pretty okay with the line they have right now. You've got Carlos Dunlap in there on the edge. You've got Kerry Hyder playing on the other side. LJ Collier can also play at that same spot, or he can move inside. So he's flexible. You've got Alton Robinson, who had a promising rookie season, but Daryl Taylor is still a question mark. Even though the Seahawks have two young guys, Daryl Taylor and Alton Robinson, really, if you want to bank on your future and really count on that happening, you might as well continue to add to it. And if Daryl Taylor doesn't work out, or you don't love what you see, or maybe you move him to Sam and you get someone else who can back up Carlos Dunlap when he eventually leaves. He is an older player. You may only have him for this year. Then you have your guys planned for the future. Once again, you never want to run into the problem you've been having before you secured your pass rush. Remember the end of Gone with the Wind or whatever, when she's like, I'll never go hungry again? That needs to be you with defensive ends.
All right, Jake.
I like the Gone with the Wind reference. Nice.
A really timely reference, something very current in today's world. Jake.
Spin the wheel,
Jake, your turn. We know Stacey's the oldest of this three.
I have never looked forward to anyone's birthday more than I've looked forward to yours.
It was very relevant to Stacey's youth.
Jake, you've got a month left of your 20s. Enjoy it.
Jake, it is landed on cornerback.
Cornerback. All right, let's do this. Cornerback, to me, is one of the clear needs still for the Seahawks in this offseason. It is an incomplete offseason. I know the Seahawks have addressed the position multiple times. Akilah Witherspoon, Pierre Desir, they've added competition along the way with good veteran guys that I think have played a lot of games, that have had success in the NFL, but overall have not been able to stay and remain consistent performers in the league. And if you talk about needs, and needs not just now but long term, the cornerback position is desperately one of them, because all of those players I just mentioned, including DJ Reed and Trey Flowers, they're on the last year of their contract. I mean, it is going to be barren at the cornerback position heading into next year, and you need to start building towards the future when it comes to corners. You don't want to have to redo and revamp the entire position the following season. So I think there's some intriguing names at the cornerback position that will be there around 56. We profiled Ifeanyi Melifonwu, 6'2", 212 pounds, a very unique, dynamic, athletic player that fits the mold of this style of defense and what Pete Carroll loves. How about Tyson Campbell, 6'2", 190 pounds, the smoothest corner in this draft. You got guys like Aaron Robinson who can flat out fly in the 4.3s. So I think that there's a lot of guys in this draft at the cornerback position overall that really fit what the Seahawks like to do, what they're looking for in their guys at the cornerback position. So I think this is a really unique year where there are cornerbacks that fit exactly what they want. Size, speed, strength. And so I think that the Seahawks will have lots of opportunities to get it done.
Oh, darn. I don't have enough time to defend taking a safety at 56. I guess we'll just have to pass on that one. Too
bad.
I wanted to hear it. A great argument.
Or inside linebacker.
I would have taken that. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Shannon Dreyer to talk some Mariners lineup woes. You got some roster news we're going to go over. Also, the Scott Service Show returns at 1:15. That's all coming your way next.